Welcome to Beyond the Checklist, the podcast where we explore the latest trends, news, and innovations in pharmaceutical manufacturing. I'm Robert, and I'm joined by my co-host, Donna. How's it going, Donna?
Hey, Robert. I'm doing fine. We got a packed episode today. We're going to be digging into some big updates from the FDA, and we also have a special guest lined up who knows the industry inside and out. We'll introduce him shortly.
Exactly. But before we dive into the interview, let's kick some things off with industry news that's making waves in the pharmaceutical manufacturing world. Let's start with the big news coming out of the FDA. The final guidance on the Advanced Manufacturing Technologies, AMT, designation program. The FDA rolled this out in early January 2025, and it's a game changer for drug manufacturers looking to implement innovative production technologies.
Yeah, and this program has been in the works since the 2023 draft. Now it's finalized under Section 506L of the FDNC Act. The goal here is to encourage the adoption of advanced manufacturing approaches. Think continuous manufacturing, novel process platforms, and cutting-edge automation.
Right. And companies that secure an AMT designation will benefit from early engagement with the FDA and expedited regulatory review. That means faster approval times for products manufactured using advanced methods.
Which is a big deal if you're in manufacturing. You know how critical speed to market can be. It's not just about compliance. It's about efficiency and improving drug supply reliability.
And the FDA isn't stopping there. They've also released a new draft guidance on 21 CFR 211-110. That's the part of CGMP rules focused on in-process monitoring and control.
It's a big shift. The draft guidance promotes the use of real-time monitoring and process analytical technology, known as PAT, to ensure batch consistency and product integrity. It's essentially a call for manufacturers to embrace data-driven continuous validation.
And there's a push towards risk-based sampling and using process models to improve control strategies. The industry has until April 2025 to provide feedback, but it's pretty clear that the FDA wants to modernize how we handle process control and validation.
All right, so let's jump into our guest today, someone who knows this industry inside and out.
I'd like to introduce our guest today, Mike Rutherford, who's had a venerated career with Lilly, Syneos, and ISPE. Maybe you can just give us a quick background on your career, Mike.
Thanks, Robert. Yeah, I've been in the industry 37 years, joined Lilly out of graduate school and had a lot of different roles. Initially went there to do lab robotics. And that was the initial part of my career. Spent almost my entire career in either quality or in computer systems quality related activities. When I left Lilly, retired from Lilly in the end of 2017, I was involved with a group that supported our product development from a computer systems validation and stamp types of activities. Then got an offer I couldn't refuse from a former boss that was at Syneos Health and went over to join them to put in place their corporate data integrity program and head up their global quality group around computer systems quality. So spent almost 30 years at Lilly, almost 6 years at Syneos Health, retired in November of 2024 from when I stepped down as the ISP International Board Chair, retired from Syneos Health. And then as I was finishing out my career, Tom Hartman, who was the president and CEO of ISP, decided to retire effective in September. And Mike Martin, who joined in January of this year in 2025, was the new incoming CEO. So I got to fill the gap there between the interim president and CEO of ISP. But to have true pleasure, amazing role, really allowed me to see behind the scenes at ISP and really appreciate more what the organization's all about.
Wow, that's certainly a long career. Mike, thanks for being here with us. So how did your involvement in ISPE help shape your career?
I spent 23 years as a member of ISPE. I initially got involved with ISPE as a result of a major FDA inspection that Lilly had and got to spend a lot of time with the national expert on computer systems quality, Bob Tollefson, as a result of that inspection and actually got Bob Tollefson involved in ISP and GAMP and so forth. So really started out involved with the GAMP COP, Community of Practice, and held all kinds of roles from America's leadership roles and eventually the global chair of GAMP. So, like I said, drastic influence. The job at Syneos was the result of all of my efforts with ISV around data integrity. So a lot of the work that was done in putting in place the Records and Data Integrity Guide, which I was one of the lead authors for, and I also sponsored the special interest group on data integrity for GAMP and for ISV. So had a huge impact on that role and moving into that role. Also was involved as a member of the International Board of Directors, first as a director and then up through the executive positions, culminating in chairman of the board in 22-23. So huge influence there. It actually has allowed me to make contacts that I would not have made through any other channels. Know a lot of senior executives at major pharma companies, at consulting companies, engineering firms. It's how I got to know folks at PV, was through my ISB connections and with Robert and so forth, involved with committees with him. So there's always been the standing joke. I've kind of been one of the Uber volunteers for ISPE. Like I said, it's been a major part of my life. It's been a major part of my career. And it's really allowed me to learn a lot about the industry in areas that weren't necessarily my expertise, but also has really allowed me to build that network. I've got a huge network of contacts. If I have a question, I can send an email to a group of folks and get 15, 20 responses back within 24 hours. So I think that's the biggest thing that ISP offers, is that networking opportunity, the option to build those relationships with amazing industry experts. So like I said, it's been a huge influence on my career. Very much so. Yeah, I have gotten to travel the world and work with affiliates around the globe. I've been to South Korea. I've been to China. I've been involved with a lot of different groups through ISP that I probably never would have had that opportunity. I was in the Philippines a couple years ago when I was board chair to celebrate their 15th anniversary for their affiliate. Probably never would have gotten to the Philippines if it had not been for ISB and some of the other places around the globe.
Memorable experiences, so, for sure.
I've had the pleasure of sitting on a couple of committees with Mike over the past years. I've reached the same heights as Mike did within the organization, but you know, your comments about volunteering, once you start, it's hard to get out of that track, and it provides a lot of rewards in of itself, especially, as you said, the networking element of that. You know, you mentioned your involvement with the GAMP and the data integrity communities and producing documentation around that. How have you seen, you know, your influence and the committee's influence change the applications within the real world environment?
Yeah, I've been involved with probably at least 10 to 15 different guides, either as a contributor or reviewer. I said I was the lead author on the GAMP guide on records and data integrity, and then was the sponsor of the special interest group. So Lori Schussler and Charlie Wakeham were lead authors on all of the good practice guides that support data integrity. So really helped define a lot of that expertise, or a lot of that ways in which we need to implement data integrity to ensure that we're meeting regulatory compliance and regulatory expectations. So I think GAMP guides have had a huge influence on the industry and how we validate computer systems, how we manage records and data integrity, how we do things like calibration and so forth. So it's got a huge, you know, it is the industry best practice. A lot of people call it the industry standard, but it's really just the best practice. But it is widely accepted. It's been reviewed by regulatory agencies around the globe. So I think the fact when GAMP 5 came out in 2000 and I want to say 8, since then, it hasn't changed much. That whole risk-based approach, focusing on the data, focusing on ensuring things are appropriately tested, not overly tested, but appropriately tested, making sure that we are actually conscious about how we're approaching that. I think the GAMP has had a major influence. It is a significant CO community of practice within ISPE. I think the last total I saw, I think we're over 70 different guides that GAMP has produced, including translations. I don't know of any other COP that's had that big of an impact on ISB and just how that guide is used around the globe. And I think that's going to continue with the new AI guide that's going to come out here in the next 3 2 months or so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My experience when I was on the drug manufacturing end, I would be in other countries outside of the US and the regulators were quoting GAMP, even though it's a guideline, not necessarily a requirement. But so, yeah, the influence is huge and it's global.
And through all these years of your career, is there one particular moment that you can think of that's really impacted you and is going to stay with you for a while?
Yeah, I think the latter years here with ISB, I've had a chance to really influence the organization through my board involvement. Through 23 years ago, when I first got involved with ISB, I would have never thought I would have held roles in the International Board of Directors. Never thought I'd ever be the board chairman. That was folks I knew, and it was, oh, there's no way I'd ever be in that kind of a situation. And then having the, I'll say, honor to serve as the interim president and CEO, that was a huge honor bestowed to me by the board. Again, not something I would have ever imagined doing, but ISP has been a huge part of my life. It's been a huge element. It's something that I've always supported. So I've gotten to see the world because of ISP. I've gotten to make major connections with not just industry folks, but regulatory folks around the globe. You know, when I think of what's the biggest memory, I actually, when I wrapped up and stepped away from interim president and CEO, put together kind of a slideshow of all the memories from an ISB perspective, from a GAMP perspective. And it was really thinking back on all of those things. I don't know what my life would have been like without ISB, quite honestly. Like I said, I've met folks, I've worked with folks that I never would have had that opportunity to work with. So I would say probably the biggest memory for me was taking over as the chairman of the board, coming into that introductory. Everybody still remembers the Caddyshack reference for my incoming presentation and don't remember what I said, but they do remember that it was related to Caddyshack and how I use that as a story. And all of my presentations like that, there tends to be a theme behind it or a point behind it, because I think your career is what you make of it. And ISB has allowed me to really make my career exceptional and have what I consider a significant influence.
So going back to kind of industry and the pharmaceutical manufacturing component, what are the biggest changes you've seen over the last 3+ decades that you've been involved in this industry?
Boy, has the technology changed, not just from the manufacturing, you know, not the, just from an equipment facility standpoint, but just from a scientific standpoint. It has changed so much. They said I first got involved with building robotic systems for the laboratory, do automated analyses. That was scary to say 37 years ago. And that was pretty cool at the time. But when I, you know, you walk out on a manufacturing floor and you see the automation that's now in place on fill finish lines in manufacturing, the technology, it has moved so fast. We now generate terabytes of data and information around processes. We now can control those processes much more efficiently, more effectively to actually get better quality of products. The advances in biotech products and medicines for patients and the kinds of things we can do these days that no one probably imagined being able to do 30 years ago. I think it's cell and gene therapy and some of the new types of capabilities that are there, the types of solutions that folks are coming up with today. I don't think people fathomed 20 years ago or even thought it was possible. I joined Lilly right after they came up with their first Humalog, which first recombinant biotech product. And what's now capable to being done in that arena just completely blows your mind. the technologies move so fast. But I think the impact of computer systems, the impact of data control systems, AI, we'll talk a little bit more about AI, I'm sure, a little later, but that is probably the next major leap from a technology perspective, is now being able to take that data and mine that data and actually use that knowledge in a more effective and productive way. The whole approach to digital technologies, I think that's the next major push. There's still ailments out there. There's still medical needs that we've been able to address but not fix. You know, we talk about Alzheimer's, and boy, there's been advances there, but that's still a holy grail. That's still something that when somebody can actually come up with something to, I'll say, fix or improve that scenario, we've got things that help delay the onset of it. But when somebody can come up with a therapy that can actually address that problem, to me, that's the kind of a holy grail out there that I know Lilly and other companies have been trying to come up with solutions, and it's very difficult. I think the other big change from in the last 30 years is just in general the costs of actually developing medications. We're now into billions of dollars to get something from discovery all the way through manufacturing and releasing it. And I don't think people understand the risks, the costs, what that really takes to get a medicine over the finish line, to actually come up with a product that can be used by the patients, and how many fail to get there. So that is a big challenge.
Absolutely. And I actually came from a different industry prior to being in the pharma, and I've been in pharma for 23 years now. Mm-hmm. But I certainly initially, there seemed to be a reluctance of the pharma industry to kind of look outside at other technologies. And that's certainly one of the changes that I've seen, is no longer an isolation and maybe egotistical attitude about what the pharma industry is, but a move to explore technologies that are working in other industries and try to incorporate those into the pharma space as well. Obviously, there are different requirements, different regulations, but more of a willingness to look outside.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think there was, once you validated it, once you got the process in place, you didn't change it. Now at least folks are looking to improve and continue to develop. And the continuous manufacturing, where we're now actually improving, controlling the process to actually make a very consistent product, as opposed to in the past, you did it the same way and hoped it came out right. I don't add any air quotes, but you know, you test it afterwards to make sure it was acceptable, versus now actually manufacturing it in a very controlled way to ensure you get the outcomes you want, which has been used in other industries for a long time.
Yep, absolutely. Yes, when I first started, it was, we'll make it, and then we'll test it, and we'll throw it away.
Yep.
It's not necessarily a feasible approach these days. So.
It is not.
Yeah, you brought up briefly the AI. So, let's talk about AI and potential impact on the pharmaceutical manufacturing area, and potentially across many components of the pharma industry, not just manufacturing.
Sure. And AI, I think, is, we talk about AI being something that everybody wants to use it. They want to try to apply it. But quite honestly, it's only as good as the data you feed to it. The old statement, garbage in, garbage out, is very true when it comes to AI. You've got to have good data. You've got to have data that you understand to actually put into those tools to make sure that you get appropriate answers out. And the technology is advancing, but I still think there always needs to be that sanity factor in there, where somebody is saying, yes, the result makes sense, or yes, the outcome makes sense. I don't know that the technology's moved enough, because the data is not understood enough to be able to get us there. I think that's what will continue to advance in the future, is the ability, because we understand the data. In the past, yes, we could manufacture products, but did we really understand every little nuance around how those products were made, how they were controlled? We're learning a lot more about that. So as we get more and more data to understand what we're doing, what changes, what controls we need to put in place to make sure that the result is appropriate, I think that's when AI can start making some of those decisions, or at least some of the decisions. You know, there's still regulations in Europe that require a quality professional to do the final review and sign off. So you still need that sanity check. And I think that's the piece from an AI perspective that is still important. Does the result, does the outcome make sense? Yes, it's a great tool. Yes, it can come up with some amazing things. You can do awesome stuff with it. But it still takes somebody at the end to say, did it get it right? I don't know the technology's quite there for that. In our industry, in the pharma industry, in the GMP world, we're talking about medicines that go into patients. Patient safety has to be the most important thing. So we have to make sure that it's right. We have to make sure that things are managed and controlled correctly. None of us would want to have a member of our family take something that we don't feel that the quality is there, that we can't ensure the quality of that medication. So I don't think AI is ready to take it over completely, but I think it's a great tool to allow us to develop things, understand things better. But I think it's going to take time to make sure that we have the right data going into those systems. And they're developed and people are managing those changes. They're managing how that technology is being updated. You know, it learns. AI does learn from itself. Are we sure that what it's learning is the right thing? Are we sure that it's not heading down a path that's the wrong approach? Okay, so I think that's the big piece with AI from a pharma industry perspective is we've got to learn what we can and can't apply it to. We've got to learn where that human factor still needs to play into decisions and making sure that there's still that sanity check there. The more we learn, the better we're going to get. Although at the same time, with our technology, if the more we learn, the more it seems there's additional things at the next level that we don't understand.
We definitely can't be throwing out the critical thinking part. Got to have that.
No, absolutely. You've got to have that critical thinking. And that I think is a piece that has to be there no matter what. GAMP's always talked about critical thinking, even back when GAMP 5 came into play. It's always been risk-based approach. Understand what's there, challenge what the questions are, and make sure it makes sense.
And yes, that accountability still has to be the consequences within the pharma industry of bad outcomes are catastrophic.
Yes.
You know, obviously, another component of that is, yeah, there's a rush to get AI into your company, whatever company that is right now. But there's still to your point, is it the right tool for the application? And there's a lot of dynamics around what AI really is. Is it a model, an algorithm, or is it really artificial intelligence? So I think that's still an area that needs to be tied down. And as the application improves and develops, then it will become clearer as well. What changes do you think the industry might need to make to incorporate AI into a true GXP environment?
I think a lot of it comes down to defining processes on how they are going to manage it, both how data gets in there, what kind of information gets in there, what kind of controls do you have for the data that is actually used for those AI tools. Said garbage in, garbage out. Where you point that tool can make all the difference in the world. If you don't have good examples, if you don't have good data that actually is where you want to go with it, it's not going to give you a good answer back. It's not going to give you the outcome that really needs to be there. Every company is running down that path, as you said. And in many cases, they're doing it within their own firewall, which is great. It needs to be within their own firewall. But that also sometimes can put blinders on them. Because it is just their data. It's not looking a little bit further beyond that. So how do you manage that data? How do you manage the intellectual property scenarios and that kind of stuff relative to AI systems? And how do you make sure that from a security, from an integrity perspective, that data is appropriate? So I think that continues to be one of the big challenges. And it's what the regulators are asking too. I mean, ISPE has been working very closely with, and the GAMP folks very closely with the FDA and other regulators, because they're very interested, but also concerned about how people are applying and trying to use it. So I think having some good rules, having some good standards behind where and when and how you apply it make all the difference and will make a huge difference going forward and will ensure the overall outcome and the integrity of the results you get back from it. I think the other piece is always have that sanity check. Somebody needs to go back and make sure what the output is makes sense. Right? You still need to have the technical knowledge, the technical capabilities to be able to do that sanity check, right? You just can't feed something in and take what comes out and assume that's right. So I think that's a little bit of a concern I have with just how knowledge is there within the industry. We've had a lot of turnover in the farm industry. So we've got a lot of younger folks. We've got a lot of folks who don't have that history, don't have, I always joked about, I'm somebody who has lived through a number of significant emotional events within the industry, major regulatory findings, regulatory issues, this challenge, that challenge. Understanding and applying that, how do you feed that into an AI system, the next generation? How do we help them understand that it's not just plug it in and take the result that's there? How do we help them understand that there still needs to be some thinking behind it? There still needs to be that common sense. There still needs to be that integrity. We still need to make sure that we're using critical thinking to make sure that it's right. That's one of my big concerns. I think it's a great tool. I like where folks want to use it, where they want to go with it. But at the same time, we need to make sure that we're being very careful about how we're using it. Because as I said, we're talking patient safety. We're talking impact on people.
I think, yeah, as you say, it could be a huge advancement for the industry as long as the application is appropriate and the data is appropriate.
And then you still have people that are skeptical, right? It's a new tool. And, you know, if you have some people within the same company they're on different sides of it, right? They may be skeptical. So that's probably going to be a challenge too, to all be consistently thinking in the same way.
I mean, there are a lot of ways in which it's being applied outside our industry that it's right. Not making it a good scenario. Stealing of personal information and being able to put together videos and stuff that looks so real you can't tell. That side of it isn't helping the whole scenario because it adds to the skepticism and it adds to people's reluctance to trust it. It's like any tool. They can be used for good and they be used for bad. I think it's important for us to talk about how it can be used for the good going forward.
Yeah, whenever you do any kind of cybersecurity training, you know, you hear about the AI part of it. It's the negative.
Oh, it is scary what's going, you know, how it's being used for
sure.
Not good things. So
I know we've been talking a lot about AI. Do you feel like that's the biggest trend that we're going to see in the next 5 to 10 years? Are there other things kind of on the horizon?
I think that from a technology perspective, that's probably one of the bigger technology scenarios. I think you'll continue to see advances from a scientific perspective. I think the other significant influence to the industry, unfortunately, is going to be the geopolitical scenario. Yes, we're seeing it in the U.S., you're seeing it other places in the world, and what will that impact be on the future delivery of the next generation of products? Like I said, I've gotten a really good understanding of what the cost of developing a product is. And as I sit down and talk with folks who have no clue and kind of explain to them the development process and the costs and, hey, 80% is in that last phase and you really want it to fail early. And we're talking billions of dollars to develop the next drug. And hey, that's one out of 10,000 compounds that might be identified and so forth. I don't think people quite understand it. Unfortunately, we cover hospital costs, which are outrageous, but we don't cover pharmaceutical costs or medication costs the same way. So people are impacted because of medications, but you also look at what can be done now to reduce the health impact on patients in the future. Through cell and gene therapy, we can now fix things in young kids that could be millions and millions in expenses of, you know, down the road from a hospital and other type of medical expenses. So I think there has to be a better way to manage that. And so that does concern me. And then obviously environmental, I'm glad to see a lot of companies now focusing on sustainability and actually focusing on the environmental impact. and how we can actually do things more effectively and reduce waste. And so that I really like where that is going. So at least, again, our industry was a little slow to move that direction where other industries were there much sooner. But it's really cool to see that happening. And I think through ISV's FOIA awards and to see companies get recognized for those types of projects are absolutely amazing. And I think it's great that we're now moving in that direction as well. So I think from that perspective, we're making great strides. But I do worry about the future of the industry and how much it'll be impacted by the political and just the world in general.
All right, Mike, we're coming to the end of our discussion here. If you could give your younger self some advice, what would it be?
Boy, it's interesting. I actually had a recent conference I was at in the UK. They actually had a discussion panel where they surveyed the group on the different generations and actually had them respond to questions and looked at the demographics based on, we were a Gen Z, a baby boomer. And it's really interesting to see the difference in the answers that you get based on that age group and the experience and so forth. I'm the tail end of the baby boomer, and so different mindset. I do worry that the generations today don't. I see a lot of the stuff that's been generated by ISV and by GAMP, but a lot of it is the older folks, the folks that, hey, they're willing to give up their weekends, they're willing to give up their evenings to volunteer and work on things and generate the next content. And we're not necessarily seeing that with the current generation. I love the fact that they're focused on work-life balance. That needs to be there. I don't think we focused on that enough, but it also is what drove a lot of the older folks. So if I say my younger self as a baby boomer, it's build the networks. It's make sure that you're interacting with folks, that you can gain knowledge, that you can understand and be able to go out and discuss things with. If I think about the younger generation, I think that if I was giving advice to somebody, a younger me today, probably a different answer. I think it would be, don't just focus on the technology. You still need to understand what's happening. I don't know that they've got that depth of knowledge. They've got the breadth, but maybe not the depth today. And that was one thing that I really valued in my career, is I was not somebody that every 2 years jumped to a new position or a new career or a new opportunity. I was somebody that stayed in a position 4 or 5 plus years because the first couple of years I was learning, really starting to understand it. And then the last several years is when I got to apply it and actually educate others. So we're losing that. We're seeing folks that want to jump and quickly change positions and move on to the next thing and jump ahead very quickly. And I worry that building that knowledge, building that deep understanding, I worry we're going to lose that. So that would be my recommendation to a younger person today, is make sure you're understanding, you're building the depth of knowledge, not just the breadth.
So no regrets about your path. You didn't really want to be a rock and roll star after all.
No, yeah. I decided to walk away from Genesis and Mike and the and focus on the farmer.
It's not
career,
too late. So.
Yeah, no, definitely a similarity there. You're not Mike Rutherford. You just named Mike Rutherford.
When I go to the UK, we do joke about that all the time. No, he's not that Mike Rutherford. It's, you know, I talk to Phil all the time, but of course.
Yeah. It's not too late now. Your next chapters can be something that can get the band back together.
Yeah, I'm quote retired now, but I still, like I said, I'm not walking away. I'm still staying engaged. I'm still staying involved. Obviously, interacting with Performance Validation and a couple other companies, and don't see myself necessarily completely disengaging from ISV and so forth. So I still do a lot of mentoring and have engagement with the training side of ISV and the foundation and so forth. So again, it's who I am. It's you spend 37 years in the industry, you're not ready
to completely
walk away. Lots of knowledge there that I want to share, and I'm willing to share with folks. So,
well, thank you very much, Mike, for sharing your insights and experience with our audience.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you
very much.
This episode is brought to you by Performance Validation, your validation partner for what's next. Best-in-class, cGMP-compliant validation for pharmaceutical, biotech, and medical devices manufacturing. With more than 3 decades of experience, Performance Validation helps you streamline using innovative approaches that balance production realities with strict regulatory requirements for quality, safety, and compliance. Learn more at www.perfval.com.